Hello and welcome to the Brand Slam podcast, where we dive into the winners behind the brands. I'm Joe Chiotta, alongside Adventure's founder and CEO, Steve Rosa. This episode is brought to you by AdVictory, the sports marketing division of Ad Global. Today's guest works at the intersection of sports, entertainment, and storytelling, helping bring one of the world's most recognizable brands to life for millions of fans each and every week.
That's right, Joe. WWE is far more than professional wrestling. It is an entertainment powerhouse built on unforgettable characters and one of the most passionate fan-based communities in the entire world. Every event is live. Every personality is part of the brand. There's a lot marketers can learn from how WWE creates emotional connections with its audience.
That is right, Steve. Today's guest has become a familiar presence across WWE programming, appearing throughout its live broadcasts and digital shows. Before joining WWE, she worked with the Cape Cod Baseball League, the Big East Conference, and the New England Patriots, building a career that has taken her from traditional sports broadcasting to one of the biggest entertainment brands on the planet. Please welcome WWE broadcaster Megan Morant to the Brand Slam podcast. Megan, welcome.
Thank you guys so much for having me. And it was quite an introduction. I really appreciate it.
We're really proud of all your success. Proud to know you. I was going to wear my Northwestern purple today because I look good in purple. Unfortunately, I left it. I'm in the summer house. I left it at my main house. My bad. And it's all my WWE swag is there as well. You attended Northwestern University in Chicago and eventually made your way to New England to become a sports broadcaster. When did you first realize broadcasting could become your career?
Wow. You know, I was an athlete my whole life, pretty much. I mean, I played every sport growing up, and then I started running at 8 years old. And by the time I was 12, I had run a 5:16 mile. So I kind of knew, like, oh, running is going to be my thing. So I had a very successful middle school career, if that's even a thing. And then that translated to a successful high school career. And I got recruited to run at Northwestern. And my whole focus on everything as I was deciding where to go to college was, where am I going to run? Now, I always had good grades and school tended to come pretty naturally to me. My parents were also sticklers. And if I didn't have good grades, I would not have been allowed to go to practice. So I did have some really high-level academic options open to me when it came to deciding on a college. But since running consumed my whole heart and soul, I had never really thought about what it was I wanted to do. I just knew I want to run, I want to compete as long as possible. And then as I started looking at Northwestern, I found out about the Middle School of Journalism, and I realized, like, wow, I can talk about sports potentially for the rest of my life, even when my running days are over. That sounds like a whole lot of fun. So that definitely led me towards deciding to run at Northwestern. And I guess it was something I think I always knew deep down that I wanted to do, but didn't realize it until there was a moment when I said, oh, wait, I'm not going to run professionally forever. I guess I have to figure out how to make a living, you know? So I was like, it would be really fun to talk about sports. So that led me to Medill and to Northwestern.
Awesome.
And not just any journalism school. Northwestern, incredible.
Some big names have come out of that school. You and I crossed paths when covering the Patriots. Looking back, how did the time covering, you know, the six-time world championship Patriots, the dynasty, like, how did that help you maybe transition to go to the WWE, to another iconic brand?
Yeah, I mean, covering the Patriots, you know, during that dynasty, like, I was there from 2017 until 2021. And I was having a conversation with someone today. They're like, wow, you were there for a lot of big moments. And I went to 3 Super Bowls during my time there. I did 3 sit-down interviews with Bill Belichick. You know, I had conversations with Julian Edelman, Rob Gronkowski, the McCourty brothers, Tom Brady, like, you name it, all of them. So that by the time I got to the WWE to audition, I wasn't really intimidated by the bright lights, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
I felt like I've sat across from Bill Belichick and I've asked him questions, which is terrifying, especially when you're a 25-year-old kid. I just had a confidence within me from that experience. And I think it really helped me nail that audition because I felt like if I can stand on the sidelines at the Super Bowl, like I certainly can stand on the sidelines at WrestleMania, and I'm not only can I be there, but I'm ready for that as well.
But it's different too, though, because of the strong entertainment aspects.
Oh, it's so different.
It's not just sports. Not just sports. It's entertainment. And here you are. You became a star in your own right, interviewing these larger than life personalities, some that go back generations and have lineage and whatever. So credit to you for becoming a star amongst the stars of the WWE. Tell us about that. How did you make that happen? Is it just being yourself, or did you have to change your game from being a sideline reporter to part of the show?
One thing that I struggled with a lot when I joined WWE was that I had this imposter syndrome because I didn't grow up a wrestling fan. In fact, I had never watched wrestling in my life until I got a call from Michael Cole and he told me they were going to bring me in on an audition. And before he told me they were going to bring me in on an audition, he asked me how much do you know about wrestling? And I was just ready to lie and say, hey, you know, I've watched it my whole life. And before I could even get words out of my mouth, he said, please don't lie. I prefer to hire people who are not fans. And so I said, great, then I'm your girl because I've never watched before. So he said, great, I will give you a month. Just start watching the product and then we'll bring you down and we'll just see how it goes and we'll see if this is a fit. And in a similar but different way from my time with the Patriots, I did not grow up in New England. I grew up in Chicago. And so while from afar, I knew about the Patriots and their success, I didn't know it on a granular level the way that these diehard New England fans do. I wasn't listening to Felger and Maz every day. I wasn't like in on all of the day-to-day stories. But when I was working for the Patriots, that was really an expectation, especially because a lot of the coverage I was doing when I was with Patriots.com was with the radio show, Patriots Unfiltered. And the people who listen to that show, the audience, they are diehard fans. Mm-hmm. They know every stat. They know every player. They know everyone who was ever on the practice squad. And so if I'm going to get behind a microphone, I have to have some credibility, but I also can't fake it. I can't pretend like I knew, you know, who was the third string wide receiver back in 1983 for the Patriots. But like, you know, I have to own that and say, I don't know it, but there are ways that I can learn about this franchise and I can learn about the history. So I remember when I was with the Patriots, like you name a football book or you name a book about the Patriots, I just, you know, dove right in to everything and tried to catch myself up as much as possible. And it doesn't happen overnight. I think like you learn along the way and then working alongside Paul Perillo, he brought me along with all of the history. And I mean, if you spit out a date, he would be able to tell you like every play mm-hmm. of that game. So just like slowly but surely you become a sponge and you start learning it. And similarly, when I transitioned over to WWE, I mean, if you immediately right off the bat try to learn everything about every historic wrestler, every Hall of Famer, every WrestleMania, all of that, it's way too much. You will get so overwhelmed because unlike the NFL, this thing is 365. There is no off season. The stories never stop. They go round and round and round and it continues forever. So I dove into the product at that moment, at that day. And how can I figure out who these characters are now, what stories they're trying to tell, and how can I enhance those stories? Because that's really the role of a backstage interviewer in the WWE. Whereas when I was in the NFL, when I was more of a journalist, I'm trying to ask questions and get answers. Mm-hmm. In the WWE, I'm trying to put over these characters. I'm trying to get the audience to buy what they're selling. And so it's like, it's a distinct difference in the two of those. I mean, essentially, my role in the WWE, especially when I was backstage, is more of an actor than it is mm-hmm. an actual yeah. journalist. And so it's always trying to think of these characters, what they're trying to get over, and what I can do to enhance that to the audience.
Well, kudos to you for putting in the work. It shows. And kudos to WWE for recognizing the talent and the effort you were going to put into this, because you're bringing in new fans. So everybody wins.
Yeah. And I got to say, as I grew up a wrestling fan, and I'm super jealous of you making the transition into it. I remember when I first graduated college, before I tried to get a real job, WWE was the first tape I sent out. It was WWE That's and MTV. So funny. And those were the two things. It's like, if I can go there, I'm good. If not, and I'll travel the country and do my thing. If not, and then and the Providence job opened up and I ended up taking that. But so I am very jealous of your career path.
Yeah, it wasn't even really on my radar. It just kind of came up out of the blue. I mean, to be honest, I saw a posting on LinkedIn for like a digital host for WWE. And I was with the Patriots at a time where I felt like I had kind of reached my ceiling in that like team reporter role and was open to anything. And I knew somebody who had connections within the WWE. So they made sure that my tape got seen. And it was such a unique time in WWE history as well, because it was during the pandemic. So WWE is in the Thunderdome, which if, you know, anybody who hasn't watched wrestling, I know you two are giant wrestling fans, but the audience is a huge part of professional wrestling. So during COVID, when there's no audience, it's like you took away a massive element. Like crowd response is everything. Like that's how you can tell who the stars are, who gets over, who's not over, you know, cheering the good guys, booing the bad guys, all of that. So for my first, I want to say 3 to 4 months working for WWE, there were no fans in the stands. And in a way, it was really good for me because I got to learn a little bit without pressure. And I got to get to know a lot of these superstars without the hustle and bustle of catching planes and living on the road. But then I remember the first show I went to with fans in the stands, like my jaw was on the floor for probably 48 hours afterwards. I was like, I cannot believe the energy in this place. And like I said at the beginning, you know, I've been to Super Bowls and everything. There is like nothing like a WWE live event. Nothing compares to that.
Megan, you've been there 5 years now. From the inside, what do you think makes WWE such a powerful brand?
I think their connection with the audience. I think it's second to none. I think, like I said before, the fan experience when you go to a WWE show, you're part of the show immediately. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I love the most is you just walk around the floor at the arena or at the stadium and everybody has so much passion and there's a reason to be in the stands. You know, I worked in the NFL for 5 years and just certainly there's a hype factor when you go to a game, but a lot of times NFL games to me feel like a little bit buttoned up, a little bit commercialized. Mm-hmm. WWE doesn't feel like that at all. Everybody who's there, it's like immediately we all get transported back to being a kid again. And you're chanting, we want tables. And something takes over all of your self-control. And you're booing the crap out of Dominic Mysterio. And everybody leaves there like, wow, we had an absolute blast.
WWE honors its past, its traditions, and protects its core human stories like good versus evil that are timeless, right? It stays relevant across so many generations because it gets immersive. It goes hard into digital media. It hires people like you. It stays current with the time. It must be so tempting for WWE to get away from its core with all the resources it has, all the new technology, everything else. What keeps WWE so grounded and special, in your opinion?
I think the core fan base is extremely important to the business as a whole. And I think to the performers as a whole, and the history and respect and honor is just part of the business of professional wrestling. Now, certainly there's been outsiders, if we can call them that, who have come in and maybe had a match, celebrity matches, and sometimes it's worked out fantastic and other times not so great. But listen, WWE's been around for a long time and they just continue to grow. And now the fact that on any given night of the week, you can turn on your TV and there's professional wrestling of some sort on TV. It's a crazy, crazy, crazy thing considering, you know, when you guys were growing up, it was like Saturday night's main event, you know, like that was it. Or you had to find a way to buy the pay-per-view. Like WWE being on Netflix is unbelievable. WWE being on ESPN is mind-boggling. And so you just continue to watch it grow and see the need for exactly what it is. And, you know, a lot of people ask me all the time, like, oh, is it a sport? Isn't that fake? Isn't that predetermined? And it's like, just watch it and you'll understand what it is. It's storytelling. That's what it is. I mean, it's some of the best stories that you'll ever experience. It's good versus evil. Wrestling really feels like in 2026, it's one of the only places that you can just escape and forget about what's really happening in the world. And I hope it continues to stay that way forever, because we all need that.
It's extreme athleticism and high art all at the same time.
It really is. You mentioned it, but fans see the show, you know, multiple times a week now. And it's like, you guys are producing at such a high level, at least twice a week. An incredible, you know, story, incredible program, like broadcast, like everything. Can you give us a little behind the scenes of what is it really like to pull off something like that at least twice a week, sometimes more, when you get in the pay-per-views and, you know, and all the big main events and stuff like that? Like, it's a big production you guys do.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's three shows. So it's Raw's on Mondays on Netflix, and then NXT, which is a developmental brand, is on Tuesdays on the CW, and then Friday Night SmackDown is on the USA Network on Fridays. About once a month, there's a premium live event. It's crazy to me how the wheel just keeps turning. And it's not just the performers in the ring. It's the people who are setting up the ring, the people who are coordinating the pyro, the people who are setting up all the lights, the camera crew, the production truck. I mean, in a way, it's like the traveling circus. I mean, I don't mean to say it in a disrespectful way.
Is.
It's like every piece of this, right? And every week it's a new city. Sometimes it's going international. And I'm just so beyond impressed. Like, as one of the on-air talents, like, I show up to work, and like, to me, whether we're in Minneapolis or whether we're in London, England, like, backstage primarily looks the same. You know, there's gorilla, there's female talent, there's hair and makeup, there's seamstress, like, there's all of that. And that's a credit to just the incredible staff that WWE has and these people who have been on the road, some of them 30 plus years. You know, the show must go on. And I just think it's so impressive what they're able to pull off and what they're able to do. And I don't think people think about that as much as they do the performers in the ring, which obviously they all deserve their flowers because they're putting their bodies on the line to entertain people and tell stories. I don't know if there's anything in the world that is similar to wrestling. It's just, I mean, it's like theater meets sports, you know? It's truly an art.
You are a persona of your own, right? You are many people. You are a mom. You're an athlete, as we've determined. You're a broadcaster. You're working in the entertainment world now. How do you develop your persona?
I think as I've gotten more confident, not only in wrestling, but like in who I am as a person, that's been able to come out a little bit more. And, you know, for me, in my role, I'm never trying to make it about me, right? I'm one of the announcers. I'm trying to make it about these superstars. Yesterday, I was doing a show on SiriusXM. I was filling in for Sam Roberts on Not Sam Wrestling Live, WWE Radio on SiriusXM. And there was just an amazing, amazing segment on Monday Night Raw where Becky Lynch, who's been a heel for well over a year, she came out. She hasn't been on TV for over 2 months. And immediately, in an instant, after working as a heel for over a year, she got the crowd to cheer for her. And it was probably the loudest pop of the night. And that's just a testament to what an amazing performer she is. And I was so excited because I had 2 hours of solo radio yesterday on Sirius. And I was like, I think I could probably do a whole hour just talking about Becky Lynch and talking about what possibilities could come out of her interrupting Liv Morgan. And so for me, I don't think it's like, you know, while it's a huge compliment that people say, oh, I'm a huge fan of Megan Moran. Like, that's obviously such a great compliment to hear from people. But I just hope that I make the men and women in the ring look like the biggest stars possible.
has being around so many strong characters, has it changed your worldview? Do you like go to the supermarket and see heels and good people? Like, is it, how do you, like, tell us, what's it like to be Meg Morant?
I think wrestling is everywhere. You just look around, right? I mean, I'm sure we all interact with heels every single day. And I think if you can understand the psychology behind professional wrestling, you can sort of maneuver through life in a very interesting way. I think there are, like, day to day, there are heels that we all encounter, and there are baby faces that we all encounter, and how you can respond to that and how to maybe not respond to that is a good way as well. But I do think, like, professional wrestling is everywhere with us. I mean, hey, look, I look in sports broadcasting and I see broadcasters who are successful. They're sort of doing professional wrestling. I mean, mm-hmm. I'll hand up, admit it. I love listening to Felger and Maz from 2 to 6 almost every day. I'm not locked in for all 4 hours, but I do pop in and out. And one of the things, I don't know if he even realizes, but Felger himself is a professional wrestler with the way that he broadcasts his talk show. I mean, he's a heel in New England. Now, I don't know if that's like who he actually is as a person, but to me, like, that's who we get. And I love it because every day he's putting on a performance. And guess what? Those phones light up every single day. People are calling in. And I think that's like what a lot of people don't realize. And people are like, oh, Felger's a jerk. He's ripping on us again. It's like, he's doing it. He's a heel. That's what he is.
He was like the first one too in this area. Like, sports talk was always like, you know, somewhat positive. And he was the first one that came along that show and went negative, and it worked. Their ratings went through the roof, and they basically put EEI, like, you know, the Big O show, like those big shows that dominated for years. He put them away because of that negativity, and it worked with the fan base, because like, it got to a point where New England was so spoiled with all the victories that when things went bad, they got so negative, and they liked listening and interacting and going back and forth with them. So it worked. He built a career on it. It's a very successful show.
And he was a print journalist, so he really had to work on the mic and become lightning in a bottle.
We've talked about the evolution of WWE and how it's changed in so many ways. Where do you think the biggest opportunities are to go next? Because it's evolved so much over the last 40, 50 years.
I think what we're seeing right now during the current product is a lot of these Division I athletes come up and take to wrestling, which is not necessarily new, right? Like, The Rock was a Division I athlete. Roman Reigns was a Division I athlete. But in the developmental system, you're seeing a lot of people who don't have a wrestling background at all. They're coming into the Performance Center, and they're working their way on TV. Some of it works, some of it doesn't. I mean, Bianca Belair, she was a hurdler at Tennessee, and, you know, she's main event at WrestleMania and become one of the biggest stars in the women's division. Obafemi, who just had a match at SummerSlam inside Hell in a Cell with Brock Lesnar, he was a shot putter at Alabama. He's only been doing this for a handful of years, and he's already, you know, dubbed by Brock Lesnar as the future of this business. And all you have to do is watch the guy make an entrance, and you immediately buy in to everything that he's doing. Trick Williams is another one. I mean, he played football at South Carolina, has only been doing this for a handful of years, becomes the United States champion. He just lost the title to Baron Corbin at SummerSlam. But I think that's really what we're starting to see a lot of. And I'm curious to see how that all plans out. I'm very excited for it as a women's wrestling fan, because I think what we're seeing in the women's division are women really being taken seriously in the main event scene. Whereas before, when you guys were growing up and watching women's wrestling, it wasn't like that. And the women were maybe getting 2 or 3 minute matches. Like, now the women are so much more respected. They have been in the main event of WrestleMania, been in the main event of pay-per-view. But I mean, you turn on the NXT show, everybody's talking about the depth in the women's division. So I think in the next however many years it is, that's only going to continue to grow. And not only are they going to be, you know, charismatic and beautiful, but they're going to be badasses that can work a match in the ring and do insane things with their bodies. And I don't know if everybody's fully ready for this women's takeover, but I cannot wait for it.
It's been fun to watch, like the whole Divas thing, and they came out as Divas and then they had their own division. They're talented and they put on a great show.
Speaking of super athletic, super women, outside of WWE and the extensive travel your job requires, right? You balance motherhood, marriage, and you also train as a world-class marathon runner. You recently qualified for the 2028 Olympic trials, and this was after you donated one of your kidneys to help save some lives. After giving away part of yourself, how far can the rest of you go?
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's like all tied together and then not at the same time. Earlier on the show, I talked about my successful high school running career and how I got recruited to run Division I, and kind of like I felt like I had the world at my feet, and I just never really performed well in college, but I got a great education and I set myself up for a lot of success professionally. However, the flame was never fully blown out. It was still like burnt within me. And I always had these thoughts of like, well, what if? And then I would talk myself out of it and say, oh, who cares? You have so much else going on. Like, you don't need to go down that path again. And as I moved around a lot for work, it kind of became difficult to make friends, right? As a kid, it's easy to make friends. You're in a classroom with a ton of people your age. You go outside and ride bikes with people your age. You play sports with people your age. Same thing, you go to college. And I mean, you're within shouting distance from tons of people to hang out with. And then you move around for your professional career. I mean, right out of school, I was in Hoboken, New Jersey. And then I moved to Boston and moved to all different parts of the city. And now I'm living in, or not now, but at the time I was living in Orlando, Florida. And I didn't know anybody outside of WWE. And so I went to the local running shoe store to just get fitted for a pair of shoes, because running was something I always continued to do. Although I wasn't doing it, you know, at a competitive level, I was still like waking up in the morning and going to run for 45 minutes or maybe an hour if I felt a little crazy. And I was, I had a knack for it, you know, so I would do like the Boston Marathon and stuff, but I wasn't like training hardcore for it. It was just like, oh, I'm good at this. I can qualify. I'm going to do the Boston Marathon. But I think in a way, because college did not live up to my expectations as far as running goes, I had like protectors on, right? Like I didn't want to train hard because I was afraid that I would fail and that I wouldn't live up to my expectations. So I go to this running shoe store in Orlando and I'm getting fitted for shoes, and I'm just talking to the guy who's fitting me, and I was telling him about my running, and he said, well, we have a group of people who meet at the track on Tuesdays and Thursdays. You're more than welcome to come. And I got a little nervous because I knew what that meant. I was like, oh, they're going to do intervals. I'm going to have to get my watch back out. I'm really going to have to go there. You know, I'm going to have to go to that pain cave. And I haven't really been there in years. You know, I've been like trotting these marathons for me. And I saw the 2020 Olympic trials, and there were over 300 women who qualified for the trials. And as I was watching the broadcast, you know, I start to look at all the names and I was like, oh, I used to run with her. I ran against her in high school. Or, oh, you know, we ran against each other in the Big Ten. And I saw all these women and like they all had jobs and some of them had kids. And I was like, wow, that's so cool that not only do they have their careers, but like they have their passion as well. And I was like, well, maybe I could do this. Like maybe two things can be true. Maybe I don't have to be like so singular and so all in on this. So I just kind of like let it sit in my mind. And you know, I talked to my husband about it and I said, you know, someday I would love to go to the Olympic trials, but it was such a crazy goal that I couldn't really tell anybody about it because it's so crazy. And I was running 320 marathons and I had to run, you know, 245. And then they came out and they lowered the time to 237, which is 6 minute pace. And I thought, oh, I'll never do it. But I thought, you know what, I'm having fun running. I'm making friends in this Orlando group, and that's all it will be. I'll just keep chipping away. And running is one of those sports that it really just rewards consistency. If you just do something for a long time and you stay healthy and you stay patient and you keep it fun, like you will get better at it. So that's really what started to happen to me. And I eventually broke 3 hours in the marathon. I was thinking about it even more, like maybe I could do this. The kidney story is a whole different tangent, but it's not entirely related. But after I donated a kidney, I ran the New York City Marathon 15 weeks later. And that really was a moment for me that I realized, like, I can qualify for the Olympic trials. And on paper, my time didn't look anything near the Olympic trials qualifying standard. I ran a 302. But knowing I ran a 302 15 weeks after donating an organ with little training heading into New York, I was like, wow, that's pretty impressive. I think I can do something special here. And now I will compete at the 2028 Olympic trials. So it's been really fun. And I think it's just opened my eyes to, we all think, like, everybody wants to do something in a year, right? Like, I think we overestimate what we can accomplish in a year, but we underestimate what we can accomplish in five. And so it's just opened my eyes to how, like, staying consistent with not just running, with, like, everything in life. You know, if you try to learn everything about wrestling in 1 year, you're going to fail. But if you just chip away at it over five, like, you can make a pretty big dent. And the same thing with running. Like, if you try to qualify for Olympic trials in a year, like, it's not going to work. But if you just keep chipping away and showing up every day, like, eventually, you know, you can make some progress.
I think that's what our listeners need to take away from this, is they should love the way I do, the way you don't let one chapter define your entire story, that you're in the moment in what you're doing and you're doing it well and you're breaking personal bests and you're striving for more. Absolutely inspiring. I just have one last question before we get to the fun stuff, the hard stuff. Kidney donor, tell us about that process. If someone out there listening is interested in being a kidney donor, tell us about the registry.
Yeah, I love that you asked this. I love talking about it because, you know, sometimes it feels a little uncomfortable, like, posting on social media about it. Because when I tell people I donated a kidney, they're like, oh my gosh, you're a hero. And I don't feel that way. So it's a bit overwhelming. Basically, a friend of mine was in need of a kidney, and I knew not one thing about kidney donation. I just knew you check the box on your license, which mine was checked. But a friend of mine in their 30s was like, I need a kidney. And I just couldn't wrap my head around the fact that, like, this could actually happen to somebody who's healthy and normal and has a family. And so I was asking about the process of donating, and my friend told me it was a laparoscopic surgery. And then a light bulb went out. I was like, oh, I could do a laparoscopic surgery. Like, that's a no-brainer. I could do that. So I went home and I just started, like, I became obsessed with that. So I started Googling and reading about what it takes to donate a kidney, reading about life after a kidney. And, like, in my extensive research, I, like, stumbled upon the National Kidney Registry, which has this amazing program called the voucher program, where you can actually donate to somebody that you're not necessarily a match for. It's essentially economy of kidneys. So if we are not a blood type match, I can donate on behalf of you and you can get a voucher that can get you a kidney, and it can also help other people get kidneys. The friend of mine who was looking for a kidney, I tested for after a lot of conversations, and I was not a match, but my friend found a match. So the book was kind of closed. And I had this weird feeling of sadness, you know, like, I was obviously very happy that they were getting a kidney, but I just really wanted to do this. I was like, oh, I really wanted to donate a kidney. I knew, like, it was not about me, but I was just like, oh, I really wanted to do that. Like, it's kind of a bummer that, like, that didn't work out. So then I was on a group chat with some of my old buddies that I used to work with at the Patriots. Somebody was talking about they had kidney stones. And I, like, sort of jokingly was like, well, if you ever need a kidney, let me know, because I just tested to donate to somebody. And my husband, who's on the group chat because we used to work together at the Patriots, he was like, God, you're just dying to get rid of that thing. I was like, well, I don't know. Like, what if someone ever needs it? And so when you know it, the phone rings, and it was actually my old boss. He calls me MOB because my maiden name's O'Brien. So he's like, MOB, are you being serious about that kidney? And I was like, yeah, why? And he was like, I need it. I was like, what do you need it for? And he's like, my wife is looking for a kidney. She just found out she's in kidney failure. And they had just got the news. It was so fresh that they hadn't, like, become as obsessed with it as I was. Like, at this point, like, I had become so obsessed with the process of donating a kidney, I read, like, everything on it. So I was like, oh my gosh, put her on the phone. And I told her about the voucher program through the National Kidney Registry. And we knew immediately, just based on having the conversation, that we were not a blood type match. So I told her, listen, I will not be offended. I've already been shut down once to donate a kidney. but I will do this for you if you want me to, and if you can't find another match. If you have somebody that's a match for you and you'd rather go that route because it's more direct and it's going to be a little bit quicker for you, like, I will do whatever is best for you. But if you can't find somebody, like, I will start testing tomorrow. And so, yeah, I started testing, and it was kind of a lengthy process. I started testing about in January, and I didn't donate until July. So, I did that, and I was, I believe, July 13th, maybe July 12th. It's July 12th. I have it written down somewhere. It's July 12th. My kidney was taken out of me at Mass General Hospital, my left kidney, and it got on an airplane and flew to it flew to Los Angeles, and it was transplanted into a man whose mother donated on behalf of him. So after he received my kidney, his mom's kidney went to somebody else who had somebody donate on behalf of them. So then their kidney went to somebody else who had someone who donated on behalf of them. So their kidney went to somebody else. So on that day, because of one donation, four people got a kidney. And then 6 months later, my previous boss's wife got a kidney because she had the voucher that I donated for.
Holy cow.
So yeah, I mean, it was amazing.
Well, scars make great stories. I've got a lot of them.
Yes. All right, Megan, we end every episode of Brand Slam with rapid fire. It's quick answers only. Are you ready?
Yes.
All right, Steve, take it away.
Most intimidating wrestler you've ever interviewed?
Paul Heyman.
Ooh.
Wow, good one. Strangest thing that's happened in the gorilla position backstage?
When the Wyatt Six returned.
Ooh, okay. Greatest wrestling superstar of all time?
Becky Lynch.
Becky Lynch.
Awesome.
What's more nerve-wracking, the Boston Marathon starting line or a live WWE interview?
For me, Boston.
Yeah, we've had the Boston Athletic Association on before the marathon. A lot of respect for that race. Not easy. A lot of potholes in Boston that could, you know, swallow some runners, but you guys persevere, and it's always a great race. What's one thing in your suitcase that you cannot live without on the road?
A toothbrush.
Ah, very cool.
Very important.
And the favorite stop on the WWE tour?
This is like probably a weird answer, but every time we go to Utah, I'm like, this is such a beautiful part of the country. I haven't spent much time out west, and I've been to Utah only for WWE. And every time we're there, I'm like, wow, Utah's got something going on. So I'm going to go with Utah.
Interesting. Very good.
If you yourself were entering the squared circle, what would your entrance song be?
Seven Nation Army.
Very cool. Cool.
All right. Guess what, Steve?
I think it's time we get gorilla position passes for the next WWE event.
I'm in. When they come back to the amp, I'm in. Let's go.
All right.
That will do it for this episode of the Brand Slam Podcast. Megan, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. It's always great to catch up with you.
Thanks, guys.
All right. And for more information on the Brand Slam Podcast, visit adventures.com. That's adventures with two Ds. Thanks for listening. And until next time, keep winning, everyone.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning into our podcast, which recently won a Shorty Award for Best Business Podcast, along with a W3 Award for Best Advertising and Marketing Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and share. Thanks for listening.